Hello, and welcome to another episode of FPL 360. I'm Sean Sullivan.
And I'm Chuck Booth.
Chuck, we have some big news to tell our listeners about. Everyone, we are officially on Twitter. You could find us at FPL underscore 360. We'll be using this handle to field questions for our weekly shows and also provide updates on when our next episodes are going to be coming out. Chuck, what else can our listeners expect to find from our Twitter handle?
We may be doing some semblances of listener competitions in the future, and who knows, if we get enough of a following, there may even be some semblance of a giveaway.
Yeah, other stuff you can expect, polls and fielding, you know, questions on what you guys want us to address on each weekly show. Pretty much it's going to be a listener-focused Twitter handle relaying whenever we have a new episode come out and stuff along those lines.
And also never forget memes. Lots of memes. Yes.
Lots of memes and lots of jokes about Joe Hart. So before we get into this week's episode where we're going to be talking about the international break, Chuck and I wanted to take a moment to talk about an email that was sent out from Taga earlier this week. For those of you who don't know, Taga sent out an email asking essentially for the community to band together and help support keeping our favorite FPL draft platform alive. After years of running the platform for free without in-site or ad advertising, our beloved FPL destination has hit a financial roadblock. However, so far the response has been amazing. The community has banded together and raised $12,000 towards their $25,000 goal. In short, what the money goes to is covering operating expenses for the final 2 months of the 2017-18 season. This addresses things such as servers, statistics, and engineering. And once that goal is hit, the rest of that money will be put towards better engineering for the platform for the upcoming season. So, while that's a lot to digest, in short, if you've enjoyed Taga as much as Chuck and I have, I would really consider donating. We have both donated on a monthly contribution, which ranges from $5 to $20. And with the wordy details out of the way, I know Chuck wanted to say something to you guys about Taga.
Yeah, so essentially, in my many years of playing fantasy sports, Taga has really been one of the more unique versions. Because while we have the official FPL stuff where it's mainly based on goals and assists, Taga really brings a robust scoring to the game that really can't be matched by letting you kind of get as deep into it or be as surface level as you'd like.
Yeah, when I started writing about the Premier League, it was actually Taga who kind of set me on the way to start my career to let me get where I'm at today. And I think the biggest thing of all is that having been primarily a fantasy football player before I crossed over to FPL, the coolest thing is knowing that you can watch a match and it's 0-0, but there's still a ton of scoring going on. It's kind of revolutionized FPL as it is. And I mean, I know Chuck can attest for this. It's been monumental in helping us start our careers.
Yeah, I would definitely second that. Like, essentially, there's no way that the two of us would be where we are right now without Taga.
Yeah, you would not be listening to FPL 360. Would not be a thing.
Oh, we wouldn't even know each other, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Guess with that said, we're going to provide a link in the episode description for where you contribute. If you can, whether it's small or little, everything helps. So I urge you, if you can, don't buy that last drink of the bar. Just send your money Taga's way. We're going to take a quick moment to just recap how good Mohamed Salah is. Game week 31, he scored 4 goals and had an assist in the drumming of Watford. He put up a whopping 29 points in OFPL, and yes, 63 in Taga. So, Chuck.
Hashtag not my captain.
Yeah. I mean, is it OFPL suicide to not have him in your team at this point?
Considering where my rank was before he scored and after he scored, yes. Because I literally climbed up to, like, the top 100K before Salah scored. After Salah scored, I went back down to like 420K. That many people own him.
I saw an article on BBC saying somewhat of like in the range of 20 million for Salah. I mean that sounds outrageous, but considering, he has 28 goals and then 11 or 8 assists, 11 OFPL assists on the season, do you think that that 20 million price range is like might actually be valid for him?
Well, first I'm going to say, don't you mean 200? Because
200
20
million.
is,
Apologize. Yeah, 200 million.
like, basically stealing him.
I mean, 20 million, that wouldn't even be a million per goal at this point. I meant 200 million. But do you think that's outrageous? I mean, looking at what Coutinho went for to Barcelona.
I mean, considering what Salah has been doing, and even more importantly, how he's been doing it, because he'll make a lot of these goals out of absolutely nothing. I don't see why he wouldn't be in that range, considering it's really hard to argue that he hasn't been far and away the best player in the Premier League this season.
Yeah, with his 4 goals against Watford, he took a sizable lead on Harry Kane in the Golden Boot race. And speaking of making goals out of nothing, I want to say it was his third goal against Watford. I mean, he literally did like some FIFA stuff. It was like absolute magic. So I guess I said you finally brought Salah in, right? I just want to double check.
Getting to it. I had him on my free hit team. It was a the try before you buy run, but I still didn't captain him. But I'm trying to figure out the actual roster mechanics to turn Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain into Mo Salah.
Well, you did get one player definitely right last week when we talked about who to bring in. Your boy Sanctosin scored 2 goals in Everton's victory over Stoke. He now has 4 in his last 3 matches. Is he someone to look at for good value for the rest of the season, or do you think he's going to fizzle out after being, you think he's a flash in the pan or he's for real?
I mean, I definitely think that he's for real. Once I'm bringing up the actual Everton fixtures, the biggest thing is just the fact that Everton's next two matches are gonna be tough ones for him with City and Liverpool, but they're running for the end of the season. Hell, he can net four more. Yeah, it's Swansea, Newcastle, Huddersfield, Southampton.
Yeah, I'm worried about him for City. I'm not too worried about him against Liverpool just because they tend to sometimes concede when they get up quick in match and quick in matches, especially considering they're going to be playing at Everton for that one. I mean, I think at 6.8 million, he's definitely someone to look at.
I mean, I'm probably
I
going to
got
be turning Harry Kane into him.
Yeah, I was gonna say with Kane being out, I mean, he's a great cheap alternative. So I guess before we move on to some double game week news, how many points did you finish with last week?
I finished with 80.
80. How many players did you play in your lineup, just out of curiosity?
More than you.
Yeah, I had 85 with 3 players who didn't play.
Yes,
Interesting.
you had 85 with essentially just Liverpool. I know.
Exactly. I had Captain Salah, 58. Robertson with the assist got 11, and Firmino got 7 up top. I just wanted to clarify in case anyone was wondering who had more OFPL points last
Sure.
week. Moving on to some more pressing news in OFPL. The double game weeks that are going to be having for the rest of the season are going to play a huge weight in rest of the season value. And while we don't exactly know who's going to be playing when, we do know who's going to have double game weeks. The teams with at least one double game week are going to be Arsenal, Bournemouth, Burnley, Huddersfield Town, Man City, Newcastle, Swansea, and West Ham. Now, the teams with the two double game weeks are going to be Brighton, Chelsea, Leicester City, Man U, Southampton, and Spurs. So I guess, Chuck, with that news in mind, how much does the double game weeks factor into the transfers you're going to be making going into game week 32?
I mean, not necessarily a ton. Like they I'm definitely going to be taking a look at them. Like one person who I need to get into my team is Sun, but like you can't, because at this point, especially if you've used your chips, depending on if you have a wild card left, you kind of have to have a mix of the single and double game week players, as well as people that are just going to play every week from here on out, just so that you don't get stuck with a dead team. And like some guys are just too valuable, even if they're only playing in one game, for you to necessarily move them out in favor of a double game week player. Like the big thing, the big issue that can always happen is that you become too over reliant on the players that are playing in double game weeks that you forget the value of a player just in a really good matchup.
Yeah, so I'm one of those people in a predicament right now. The only chip I have left is the bench boost. So I have no wild card, no free hit chip. And the way I'm kind of looking at it, so I don't get overwhelmed, and it sounds like a simple approach, it's just to go one game week at a time. And as you said, Chuck, playing the matchups and don't get too wrapped up in the fact that how can I move here? How can I do that? Because at the end of the day, it's all about who's playing who on a week-to-week basis. I mean, I guess though, you mentioned Sun. Why do you really target Sun as someone who's so valuable for the rest of the season with obviously with those double game weeks?
Well, number one, Sun's going to be playing as a point striker with Harry Kane out. Number two, Spurs have some very important matchups and they have to win as much as they can to stave off Chelsea. Number three, the backup striker's Fernando Llorente. No one wants him playing any significant game time.
Well, I was going to mention that you beat me to it. So you're saying Fernando Llorente is not going to come in and offer the same production that Harry Kane has?
Unfortunately, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that one out.
Yeah, I was going to say the Leaning Tower of Spain is not going to offer what Kane has. I mean, do you see, seriously though, do you think he's going to get any starts or you think Pochettino is just going to run this on as a striker?
I mean, I think there may be times when like Llorente will come in the 60th minute, something like that, just to spell Sun for a little bit. But I don't think there's any way that he gets more than like one, maybe two starts against like inferior opposition between now and the end of the season.
So if you're in a 12-team toggle league and you need to add a striker on a for a punt, Llorente is only owned in 25% of leagues. Do you think he
Well, he
is?
hasn't even been effective when he started in the league for Spurs. Llorente's first goal was against, like, what was it, League Two opposition in the FA Cup when he got a hat trick that was barely a hat trick?
So you're saying if you're in a 12-team league and you're desperate for a forward, there's no value in picking up Llorente.
There is not.
Okay. Because, while I don't think he's that good, I think that that team has enough goals in him where if he does start up top, it wouldn't make sense. But, at the same time, as you said, Sun's durability allows him to play pretty much wherever Pochettino wants
For
him.
me, it's just the issue that even when Llorente has played or started, he's not mobile enough to actually make the Spurs attack click.
Yeah, I mean, he is. It's funny just because he kind of came in and people were thinking he was going to be better than Vincent Janssen was, but Vincent Janssen was actually better than he was since he's come in,
Yeah,
even though he was useless last season.
the second striker position is just cursed at Spurs.
Yeah, what's with that? I was going to say, you guys have struck out like the last 5 times you brought someone in to back up Kane.
I don't know. 'Cause like I thought that Clinton Niger was going to be useful. No. Janssen, top scorer in the Dutch league. No. Llorente, he scored 16 for Swansea. No. Like, what can you do?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just a testament to how good Kerry Kane is. Not that anyone needs to be told how he is, but it's interesting to see that. So I guess looking at the rest of the season, obviously we have the double game week information out and about. I feel like it's time we look at some premium players and kind of see who we think has better value moving on. And the first two that comes to mind is the Manchester City pair of Leroy Sané and Raheem Sterling. In OFPL, they're both priced at 8.6 million. So, Chuck, where would you land on this argument? Which side?
Well, it's got to be what have you done for me lately? And that's Leroy Sané. Sterling had already shown signs of cooling off prior to his injury, and Sané has come back from his injury just hitting the ground running.
Yeah, so far in the season, Sané has 8 goals and 11 assists in roughly 1,800 minutes, and Sterling has 15 goals, 11 assists in 2,000 minutes. With Sané's production backloaded to of recent weeks. So, if you're looking at one of these guys, what would be your definitive statement or argument towards Sané for the rest of the season?
Well, I mean, I can't make anything definitive with the two of them because more likely than not, they're probably going to end up like flipping on and off. It's just Sané's in form, Sterling's not.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a Sterling owner for pretty much the entire season, and I know he's cooled off, but I'm going to stay on him mainly because I think his dip in form means that he's due to come back up. Now, that's putting a lot of faith in the fact that I think Sterling has just turned a corner in his career under Pep Guardiola. And obviously, as I said, Sané's been in better form lately, but that's just how I kind of see it. Also, I brought him in for cheaper, so if I sell him now, I'm not going to be getting him, as much profit as before just because his prices dipped a bit.
I mean, I'm gonna turn Sterling into Sun, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's a smart move based off the discussion we just had. I'm not going to really disagree there on that one. But one I know that we will disagree on is the value of Willian at Chelsea versus Theo Walcott at Everton.
Mean, will we?
I mean, who are you going to say? It depends.
Only one has done anything at their team.
Dude, I mean, here's the thing with this. I think Walcott is the guy to own the rest of the season, just hands down.
But I think Walcott right now is just making more space for everyone else, but not actually doing anything himself.
So here's the point being, Theo Walcott's entire career as an England player is on the line for the rest of the season. He needs to turn it on, otherwise his time as a three line is completely done. And I have enough confidence in him that he's at least going to make a push. And I think even though he's only at 7 million versus 7.1 to Willian, I think someone playing for their international career is something better to bank on than a guy who on any given day won't start because Antonio Conte has an itchy hair in his ass.
Well, that's one way to describe it.
I mean, what else would you call the shit show that is Chelsea's front line?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I really don't know what to do with Chelsea, but I also don't particularly know what to do with Everton.
I mean, I think it's a really interesting comparison just because Willian has 6 goals and 7 assists this season. Walcott has 2 goals and 2 assists in 8 starts since joining Everton. But at the same time, both clubs have separate but equal issues in how their struggles are. With Chelsea, as we said, we don't know what Conte is doing up front. With Everton, it's just without Sigurdsson, the attack pretty much goes through Sigurdsson, and Walcott has a bigger responsibility to create. So what that does make him more valuable in Toga, in OFPL, it puts a bigger strain on him, considering it's more like he's going to get assists than goals. But I mean, with that being said, what really makes you think Willian's a better choice over Walcott?
I mean, I just don't think that either's a good choice.
I mean, for around, so let's say, from in the price range of 7.1 where Williams at, Wolcott's at 7.0. I mean, is there anyone else who really jumps off the page for you in terms of midfielders? And I mean, I can give you a couple names based on price. I mean, we have Ramsey at 6.9, Arnautovic at 6.9, Adam Lallana at 7.3.
I mean, I'd argue that either Decore or even potentially Milivojevic are better rest of season options. They're a lot cheaper too.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of Milivojevic. The problem with that being is like you're banking on a penalty for him.
I mean, isn't banking on a penalty the same damn thing as banking on Willian starting a game?
I didn't anticipate you saying that, but looking at how many penalties Milivojevic scored this season and looking at the recent lineups of Antonio Conte, I think there's a bigger correlation than I realized.
It's one of those things where it 100% shouldn't be the case, but like, how many penalties has he put away now?
Like five, I believe. Five out of six he's attempted. I think six and seven in all competitions. So, I mean, he's been clinical from the spot.
Yeah, like it, like dude has, is it 8 goals? Am I counting this right?
Yeah, which is crazy. It's crazy to think that he has 8 goals this season. But yes, he does.
Yep, he wow. Yeah, I take Milivojevic over Willian, and
Yeah.
you can lock that one away.
Yeah, lock it up. One more rest of season comparison we wanted to mention is up top. Glenn Murray versus Chris Wood, just because I'm a big believer in Chris Wood now that he's fit. Do you think I'm too high on the Kiwi?
So, I mean, I like Glenn Murray, but Brighton has a shit end to the season. Burnley doesn't. The issue with Chris Wood is just going to be how much of his playing time is Ashley Barnes going to eat into. But Wood has shown that even if he's coming off the bench, he's still going to be dangerous as hell.
Yeah, Brighton face four top six clubs in their final matches of the season. Meanwhile, outside of Arsenal and Chelsea, Burnley have a pretty good run of fixtures. The stuff with Chris Wood has just been crazy because when he came in at the beginning of the season, I kind of thought he was going to be the striker that Burnley needed. And granted, he's missed some time, but in his last 75 minutes of action, he has 3 goals.
Yeah, but it's just the thing that, like, it's not like Barnes has been a slouch, as odd as that is, because he hasn't really done much in his career to date.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not slighting Barnes. What I'm just saying is that I think, as good as Barnes has played lately, I think because Woods outperformed him in like half as much time,
But remember, it's coming
just.
off t it's coming on against tired legs versus West Ham. Like, we do have to add that caveat.
All right, that is fair. But the thing with Barnes is that I think Woods or Chris Wood is just a better version of Ashley Barnes. Which is why I
I
think.
mean, in a perfect world, Burnley would just play a 4-4-2 and play them both together.
Yeah, exactly. But that's not the Sean Dyche way of
Well,
mine.
there's the fact that their only other striker is Sam Vokes.
Yeah, I mean they essentially have three versions that are just slightly better of each other. With Vokes at the bottom of the total pole, and right now I guess Woods and Barnes.
Yeah, the only different striker they have is Naki Wells, who essentially isn't going to get any playing time because, one, he was hurt when he came in, and two, what use does Burnley have for speed?
And I'm also just going to throw this out there. He was so good that Huddersfield Town sold him. So that's another reason why I don't think he's going to see the pitch for them in any sort of significant amount of time.
Teams make mistakes. He was their
I
top
mean,
scorer in the championship.
In all honesty, if you look at his stats, Wells has not played more than 10 minutes in a single match for
No, I
Burnley
mean,
this year.
I'm not trying to justify that he's going to actually play games for Burnley. Let's clarify that. I'm just saying that he's the other striker that they have, and he's the only person with a different skill set than their other three strikers.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny because I thought if he hadn't been hurt pretty much the entire season, I thought Jonathan Walters would factor in, but he hasn't been able to get
I
on
don't
the
even
pitch
get why the hell they
either.
brought Jonathan Walters.
Because he's really cheap, and he sometimes pops up with goals. And Stoke City couldn't have two strikers over the age of 35 on their roster, so they had to get rid of one. Yeah, I mean, as you can tell, it's been a real busy week for us with the international friendlies. We're at the point where we're talking about two 35-year-old strikers that used to be on
Yeah, I was
Stoke
gonna
City
say,
last
I mean,
season.
we're arguing about Jonathan Walters and Naki Wells. So we
God, we didn't.
100% need the Premier League back.
What would we do without the Premier League? I'm already worried about this summer, man.
We're gonna go through withdrawal, and you guys are gonna get to hear all about it.
Exactly. But one thing we do have to tide us over is talking about some juicy Champions League fixtures. I mean, I'll just cut to the chase. Manchester City Liverpool is going to be electric over two legs.
It will be. It just as it was in their two matchups so far this Premier League season.
So I think the big X factor to look at is both clubs, beginning with game week 32, are going to play five matches in the span of, I think, 15 or 16 days. So neither club's going to really have an advantage over each other during, in terms of rest. Who would you lean towards in this matchup? Because it's pretty much just going to be a goal fest, I would assume.
Well, I mean, if it was one match, I'd take City. But with it being two, I don't think they can stop Liverpool.
Really? So you think that you're going to give Jurgen Klopp the edge over Guardiola?
Honestly, yeah. I don't think Klopp's necessarily a better manager than Guardiola. I think Klopp's management style is more likely to exploit the mistakes of Guardiola.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be something where it's maybe like 5-6 or 7-6 on aggregate. I think it's just going to be all attacking. I think both managers have enough firepower to get it done. I would definitely bet the over in both of these matches. And I just think it's crazy because, I would have liked to see Manchester City and Liverpool matched up against Juventus or Real Madrid or Barcelona or something like that. But it's going to be kind of nice to see the two highest scoring clubs in the Premier League go head to head on the international stage.
I was gonna say, I'm not complaining for getting Man City versus Liverpool four times in a season.
It's kind of like when you snuck out during high school and your parents were like, "I'm not upset, I'm just disappointed." Because
I mean, I'm not even disappointed.
I would have liked to see, a Real Madrid Liverpool match. And now it's we have to
But
watch the
instead, we
two.
got a Champions League final rematch.
Yeah, but we have to watch the two, arguably the best teams from the Premier League of late go head to head in the Champions League, and we don't get to see two advance to the next round.
Well, I mean, if other Premier League teams actually took care of business, we could have saw more than two, but so it is.
Cricket, cricket, Manchester City, Tottenham. Cricket, cricket. No, I mean it's gonna be exciting. I'm looking forward to it. I'm more looking forward to Premier League coming back, so I have something to look forward to on a daily basis. This weekend's gonna be weird watching international friendlies, but are there
Oh,
out
you
of the
actually
other?
watch international friendlies?
I mean, like, I want to say I don't, but I'm probably gonna watch all of them because I really don't have anything else going on for me.
MLS. MLS.
Oh yeah, MLS. Yeah, but half those guys are on international duty too.
Yeah, but I'd rather watch shit soccer that matters than shit soccer that doesn't matter.
That might have to be the byline for FPL 365. Out of the other matchups, Juventus Real Madrid, Bayern Sevilla, Barcelona Roma, I guess I don't really want to talk about them in depth. Who do you have winning those three matchups?
So, I have Juventus because I have to root for Juventus for the rest of Champions League just due to the fact that they knocked us out.
Yeah, transitive property.
Bayern because that shouldn't be a matchup. I'm oddly intrigued by Barcelona versus Roma, even though I know Barca is going to win.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go Real Madrid, I'm going to go Bayern, and I think Roma will give them a really, really good showing when they play at their stadium, but I mean, the Messi show is just too good. I mean, as we saw against Chelsea, I mean, he can do anything he wants at any point in time in the match. So I don't really see how Roma can outlast them over two legs.
Most definitely.
Thank you for listening to FPL 360. I'm Sean Sullivan.
And I'm Chuck Booth. And remember, you can find us on Twitter at FPL underscore 360. And you can also find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
May your arrows be green.